Good morning. This is Maggie Jones, and this is Natural Wonders. I'm going to read this morning the chapter, The Human Flock, from Helen MacDonald's wonderful book, Vesper Flights, published by Grove Press in 2020. It's a collection of essays. Under heavy rain, the lakes have turned to phosphorescent steel. Pygmy cormorants hunch on dead trees. 12 of us stand on the shore. Some have set out spotting scopes on tripods on the grass. Others carry binoculars. Silently, we stand and wait for the Hungarian dusk. As the sun slips behind the expanse of water, the air grows colder. We strain our ears until there it is. We hear a faint noise like baying hounds or discordant bugles. At first hardly discernible through the wind rattling the reeds before it grows into an unearthly clamor. "Here they come," someone whispers. Overhead, a long, wavering chevron of beating wings is inked across the darkening sky. Behind it flows others, and there are others behind them, all passing overhead in ever-increasing waves, filling the air with a barrage of noise and beauty. The birds above us are long-necked, graceful Eurasian cranes. Every autumn, more than 100,000 of them stop off on their southward migration from Russia and northern Europe to spend a few weeks in the Hortobágy region of northeastern Hungary, feeding on maize left in the fields after harvest. Every night, they fly to roost in large numbers in the safety of shallow fish farm lakes, attracting wildlife tourists who come here to witness the spectacle of their evening flights. Similarly impressive congregations can be seen in other places. In Nebraska, more than 500,000 sandhill cranes fatten up in cornfields before continuing their spring migration. In Quebec, watchers are awed by blizzards of snow geese blotting out the sky as they rise from the Saint-François River. In Britain, clouds of wintering starlings flying to their roost draw crowds of all ages. Standing close to vast masses of birds affects everyone differently. Some people laugh, some cry, others shake their heads or mutter profanities. Language fails in the face of immense flocks of beating wings, but our brains are built to wrest familiar meaning from the confusions of the world. And watching the cranes at dusk, I see them first turn into strings of musical notation, then mathematical patterns. The snaking lines synchronize so that each bird raises its wings a fraction before the one behind it, each moving flock resolving itself into a film strip showing a single bird stretched through time. It's an astonishing illusion that makes me blink in surprise. But then, part of the allure of flocking birds is their ability to create bewildering optical effects. I remember my amazement as a child watching thousands of wading birds, knots, flying against a cool gray sky, vanish and reappear in an instant as the birds turned their counter-shaded bodies in the air. Perhaps the best-known example is the hosts of European starlings that assemble in the sky before they roost. We call them murmurations, but the Danish term sort sol is better, black sun. It captures their almost celestial strangeness. Standing on the Suffolk coast a few years ago, I saw a far-flung mist of starlings turn in a split second into an ominous sphere, like a dark planet hanging over the marshes. Everyone around me gasped audibly before it exploded in a maelstrom of wings. The changing shape of starling flocks comes from each bird copying the motions of the 6 or 7 others around it with extreme rapidity. Their reaction time is less than 1/10 of a second. Turns can propagate through a cloud of birds at speeds approaching 90 miles an hour, making murmurations look from a distance like a single pulsing living organism. Sometimes they seem uncannily like an alien groping entity, living sand or smoke moving through a suite of topological changes. Murmurations are thrilling, but they can also provoke an emotion akin to fear. And fear is in large part why many of these flocks exist. Cranes, for example, roost in shallow water because it's safer than sleeping on the ground, and the sheer profusion of beating wings makes it hard for predators to focus on any single starling in a murmuration. No starling wants to be on the edge of the flock or among the first to land. Anne Goodenough, who runs the Royal Society of Biology and University of Gloucester International Starling Survey, speculates that murmurations may act as signposts to invite other starlings to join a specific roost and increase its size. In cold weather, large roosts keep birds warm. But in the air, fear is the factor shaping the flocks, pressing and contorting them as they fly. A dark, shivering wave running through a mass of starlings is often a response to a raptor diving into the flock in search of a meal. It's nearly dark now at the Hortobage fish ponds, and my ears ring with the cacophony of calling cranes. There is boiling confusion over the lake as flocks come from all directions to join the mass on the water that now looks like stifled particulate fog. White-fronted geese are pouring in too, tumbling and side-slipping from the sky through swaths of other wings. Suddenly it's almost too much to bear. I feel uncomfortably disoriented. Big flocks of birds can do this. Birders have described the experience of watching flocks of rooks at nightfall as so confusing and noisy that it produces in the viewer something close to motion sickness. In search of something solid, I peer through a spotting scope focused on the far side of the lake. In the circle of the viewfinder, the confusion resolves into individual birds. It's so dark that their color has leached away. I'm watching stately groups of cranes in grayscale, landing, drinking, shaking their loose feathers, greeting one another, and getting on with the business of finding a place to sleep. The switch in recognition is eerie. I go from seeing rushing patterns in the sky to the realization that they are made of thousands of beating hearts and eyes and fragile frames of feather and bone. I watch the cranes scratching their beaks with their toes and think of how the starling flocks that pour into the reed beds like grain turn all of a sudden into birds perching on bowed stems, bright-eyed, their feathers spangled with white spots that glow like small stars. I marvel at how confusion can be resolved by focusing on the things from which it is made. The magic of the flocks is this simple switch between geometry and family. As I stand there watching the cranes, my mind turns to human matters. The village we'd stayed in the previous night had felt so much like my home in the fens. It had the same damp, underwater air, chickens roaming around the backyards, poplars, piles of winter firewood. Before I came here, I'd asked a few British friends who'd spent time in Hungary what it was like, and several said that the strangest thing about it was how much it felt like home. It's painful to recall that now. It has been nagging away at me all the time I've been here. The razor wire fence the government has erected more than 100 miles south of here to stop Syrian refugees walking across the border from Serbia. The thought of crowds moving slowly northeast as the cranes move southwest. Watching the flock has brought home to me how easy it is to react to the idea of masses of refugees with the same visceral apprehension with which we greet a cloud of moving starlings or tumbling geese, to view it as a singular entity, strange and uncontrollable and chaotic. But the crowds coming over the border are people just like us, perhaps too much like us. We do not want to imagine what it would be like to have our familiar places reduced to ruins. In the face of fear, we are all starlings, a group, a flock, made of a million souls seeking safety. I love the flock not simply for its biological exuberance, but for the way it has prompted me to pick similarity out of strangeness, for the way its chaos was transformed on reflection to individuals and small family groups wanting the simplest things, freedom from fear, food, a place to safely sleep. And that was the chapter called The Human Flock from Helen MacDonald's book, Vesper Flights. This is Maggie Jones. Thank you for listening.